I'm one of those geeks that, like, when the show's like, oh, we cut this one character out because I'm not important, I'm like, you don't even understand. In 2.5 books, that character's going to be super important for half a chapter.
It was the year of Fire Takes.
The year of deconstruction.
The year we took down Deep Space Nine.
It was the dawn of a new show.
The year of a great journey.
The year of deadlines.
And the year of joy.
It was a new season.
It was the end of another.
It was the year everything changed.
The year is 2026.
The name of the show, you gotta check this out.
Welcome back to another episode of You Gotta Check This Out, where two nerds go through something nostalgic that they think you gotta check out. We are pretty much finishing up Babylon 5. We'll explain. There's more, but there may not be more. And I'm here with Mike Slater of MikeSlater.com. I'm Dre Alvarez. And to wrap up the Babylon 5 season 4 season of You Gotta Check This Out, we had a special guest. Mike, who do we got?
Yes, we're about to get into the very end of season 4, which, as you mentioned, was kind of the end of Babylon 5, kind of not. We'll slowly go into what we're doing as we get forward in that. But yes, today we have a very special guest, someone, the second brother we've had on the show. Two brothers on a show. Could you imagine what that would be, Dre, since we had the Flints on last time?
I was trying to think if we've had any other. I mean, surely some of our other guests are brothers to people.
But not on the same
not
time.
Not on the same show. Yes,
well,
that is
today
correct.
Today on this show, we have our very special guest today is none other than your brother, Daniel Alvarez. Daniel, can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Dan Alvarez, and a big fan of Babylon 5, and I'm an avid listener to all of the You Gotta Check This Out episodes, so I'm already prepped and studied for the quiz that I know is coming.
Excellent. Well, you got a good challenge today. I know Dre's been asking me for a while to include him in on the quizzes too, so we get to have a brother versus brother challenge.
Well, as noted, we decided Babylon 5, which is this giant sprawling, 120 episode when all is said and done, because it was back in the age of real television, 22 season episodes, an amazing magnum opus by J. Michael Straczynski that was planned out mostly. And we think people have to check it out, but that's a lot of TV to watch. So we have picked out key episodes. My advice is, if you're not going to watch it all, you can go through the key episodes that Mike and I have selected and listen to the You Gotta Check This Out episodes. And that is a fantastic way to traverse the series. And we are getting, as kind of mentioned, to the end of what was thought at the time to be the first end. We're at season 4, episodes 20 and 21, Endgame and Rising Star, which were the last kind of two episodic episodes of Babylon 5. They found out they were renewed. And so for the season finale, they did a clip show that was going to be like episode 4 or 5 of season 5. So it's kind of weird. We're kind of doing the season finale, but it's not the official season finale.
The way that I came to think of it, because I've gone through and by now I've seen the entire series up through season 5. These are the last two real Babylon 5 episodes, for my opinion. After this, we enter what I think of as the Return of the King phase of the series, where they just have a whole season in one episode that's like a victory lap they're taking, which is kind of like the last hour and a half of Return of the King.
How many times can you end a movie by every episode? We have nothing left, so let's just make another reason to just end this thing. Oh, we have another episode. Let's end this thing again.
Yeah. Now, for this episode, we're talking about episode 20 and 21, Endgame and Rising Star.
First thing we usually like to ask people on the show, and this is going to be a very fun topic for you and I, is what was your introduction, familiarity with Babylon 5 before prepping for this episode and post-prepping for this episode?
So I grew up watching Babylon 5, and one of the big differences between me and most of your guests, other than me having watched the entire series beforehand growing up and rewatching it again, along with your episode, kind of being like, oh, they're talking about the fourth episode, but I'm kind of one of those weird, I'm not going to watch the fourth episode until I've watched the first three. And then, oh, they're talking about season two. Well, I guess I got to finish all 22 episodes of season one before I watch episode one.
You're a true completionist.
Even as we end the episode with, and by the way, you really don't need to check out the next five episodes before the finale. You can just hop straight to the finale. You're like, what are these people know? Hold my beard.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you know, I really had this one episode, but in, you know, three episodes from now, they mentioned this. I was like, well, I guess I'm watching four more episodes. More than anything, I like never really watched Star Trek growing up. And I don't know, I was just like, you know, we watched Star Wars and then I was like, man, I don't care. And then I have a friend who is like a diehard Star Trek fan. And so years ago, I had made a deal with him, and he's also a Babylon 5 fan, but I made a deal. I said, okay, if you watch one season of Game of Thrones, I will watch an entire series of whatever Star Trek show you want. You know, Next Generation, I thought was kind of like the go-to. And he was like, you should watch Deep Space Nine. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And he ended up watching the entire series of Game of Thrones because I knew I would get him that way. But watching Deep Space Nine, I kept being like, man, this is such a ripoff of Babylon 5. And it just, all of your other guests are always like, yeah, Babylon 5 is such like a low budget Deep Space Nine. And when I watch Deep Space Nine, I'm like, man, what a pathetic attempt of trying to be a Babylon 5. You know, like, this is a dumb rendition of a Londo character. This is a pathetic Jakar.
The one comment I've heard is that, like, Sisko is legit.
I mean, sure. I mean, I'd honestly, like, the Ferengi guy I really like, too. A lot of his, like, storylines. But the one thing that I will say, like, there are definitely filler episodes in Babylon 5, but you can kind of always see, like, the arching plot progress in the first season, not as much as the rest, but in Deep Space Nine, there are just so many, like, Adventure of the Week episodes that I'll just kind of, like, finish and be like, what the hell did I just watch, man? What is happening? And I was telling Dre, there's a whole thing with O'Brien and his wife who's pregnant, but when his wife gets beamed up with one of the other characters, the pregnancy is, like, moved to the other character. And so now he is, like, caring for, I think she's like the chief of security on the station or something like that. But because she's an alien, the pregnancy is, oh, it's only going to take 3 months now. And it's okay. So obviously they had this plot and then this other person got pregnant in real life and they were like, how do we write this into the show for a matter of time? But I'm watching this and I'm like, what is going on? It has been eight episodes that they even talked about, like, the wormhole or whatever that the station is, like, next to. So I was like, God, this is such a lame Babylon 5.
Literally losing the plot after a few episodes.
Yeah, and then they come back and you're like, oh yeah, there's a character from, like, the other side of the wormhole who does telekinesis. And then they're like, yeah, that'll never come up again. And, like, the race is still there and heavily involved. But, like, they never use that
so
power again.
So this is actually blowing my mind. We had the incomparable, I'm loving that adjective for, by the way, Hannah Michaels, who was also a Deep Space Nine expert. It was fun to get kind of some of the back and forth and noted how many similarities. And it's funny that both Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine both had a character get telekinesis. And, like, oh, my God, do you realize the implications of this? And they're like, man. Doesn't matter.
They're like, do you understand how expensive this will be to do this every week? And they're like, yeah, never mind. Let's
move on. It was a string to do this. I was going to know, though, like, for our background, it's interesting because, you know, of course, we grew up together. And I think we've kind of mentioned you after me. And my intro was we had a middle school, grade school, because we went to the same school and it went K through eight, my brother and I. And when I was in middle school and Daniel was in grade school, there was a counselor named Rich, and I've talked to him a few times on the show. Giant German dude that looked like he belonged in Highlander. Also talked a lot about the show Highlander with me. So he kept pitching Babylon 5 to me, and Daniel is aware of my younger self and my snarkiness. Don't tell me what to do. Now, a criteria of ADHD, younger me, just a jackass. But eventually I, like, bit and I started watching in the middle of season four. So actually, Mike, I think the episode right after the end of The Shadow War was my first episode of Babylon 5.
So you had gone and backfilled after that, but you were you watching then when they originally aired then from that point on?
Because TNT did once per afternoon and went through the entire thing. And so I think I've mentioned, I missed Signs Importance in season one. That was one of the few I missed that I had to wait till it came back around. They did release the In the Beginning movie, which, interesting, we might discuss soon. But yeah, Daniel, I think did you hop on a little after me? Did you get it more organically? Did you start at the beginning when TNT started airing it on the afternoons?
I mean, I thought I remember watching it in order. So I must have been like on the TNT repeat circuit. But yeah, because I don't remember when. But I think like in fifth grade, that's when I was like, I'm watching Babylon 5. And I knew that's when I was going through like the Shadow War part. I'm assuming that I watched it more in order than you. I'm sure there were just episodes we missed just because, again, like, there was no streaming back then, so you just missed a week. I hope there was nothing important, because it's going to take 3 weeks before that episode shows back up again on whatever channels.
Yep.
Previously on Babylon 5.
The last episode that we did with the amazing Abe Fedoroff, we did not make a 6-7 joke at all during the episode, Mike.
Good for us.
Boo us. All right, but that was on the Face of the Enema. Face of the Enema, that would have been a much...
Much different episode.
The Face of the Enemy. So the last episode was on The Face of the Enemy. We mentioned they thought he had 2 seasons and he had a Game of Thrones issue. Unlike Game of Thrones, HBO, George R. R. Martin said, hey, take as much time as you need to wrap the show. And Benioff and Weiss said no. Babylon 5, they basically said, hey, you got to wrap it up. And so we had a couple episodes, The Face of the Enemy being one of the more hilarious, where we have a lot of just characters being like, okay, remember this, remember this, remember this, remember this, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. Actors react to it in a blank room as if we're out of money. And we found out kind of this big plot line where Michael Garibaldi was a secret sleeper agent. Garibaldi realizes he's been a mole the whole time. We end the episode. Sheridan's been captured. Garibaldi realizes everybody's against him.
The whole place was ransacked. His boss's precious virus was taken away from him and killed with his first man. Everybody was on such a down note.
So surely that would take several episodes to wrap up. Answer, nope. Episode 18, we get a really interesting bottle episode where Sheridan has been captured. And is getting interrogated, and they're really going for mind confusion. This is to further President Clark's agenda. And so at one point, another person is brought in hostage, and it looks like they're being tortured, and they're trying to get him to break to do that. And then at the very end, Sheridan convinces the other prisoner not to crack. And then the end of the episode switches, and we realize the prisoner was an actor the whole time. Wild, fun episode, really filmed as a play. Dug it, but both you and I, Mike, in our notes, were like, nothing to say. I don't know if that's enough.
Yeah, it's just one of these episodes, because you got to fill 22 episodes a season. It's kind of nice to take a beat after that last episode we had where, like, you, as we were saying, everything was happening one after each other. So it's kind of nice to take that breather and just sit with the characters for a while and let Sheridan have all these character moments across this episode as he's getting tested in a single room.
I really dug that episode, actually, mainly because there's so much talk about, like, President Clark torturing people and, like, getting them to, like, even like a lot of the ISN people. Oh, they came out and they said they were working with this person and they named other people and this is what they said. And so you kind of just, yeah, they're bad, whatever. You know, something's going on where this is like showing you the actual techniques of, oh, they do like a princess bride, like, and you know, I eat a bunch of poison every day so that I can poison this sandwich and I give it to you. Oh, you're now more poisoned. And then similarly, oh, here's a coffee or something. And it's, well, yeah, there's something in it. And that level plus the was like a Drazi or whatever being tortured. And then
yes, Drazi.
He'd been on it. And like, I loved that the end of the episode, it kind of seems like Sheridan won. He is our hero. He like has strong enough resolve to resist everything. And he knows that like someone's going to come for him. So they just bring him to another room. And then a different torture just starts the entire process all over.
And Drazi Alien was played by Wayne Alexander, who played all sorts of things, including Sebastian, aka Jack the Ripper, who also was an interrogator. So they love bringing in Wayne Alexander as aliens and interrogator, and they got to send him off being both at the very end. So for the episode is episode 19, Between the Darkness and the Light. This is the description as an FYI. Lita Franklin and Garibaldi help Sheridan escape. Ivanova attacks Earth Destroyers. Sheridan returns to Babylon 5. Like, come on, TV guide. Yeah. What are we doing here?
Well, I like it when it's so much happens and there's even a smaller description. Garibaldi makes an interesting discovery. What? That was just like a little thing at the end of the episode.
Yeah, so we have the either JMS hides what really happens or the description gives everything away. And I mean, what we get here is, they managed to break out Sheridan. He's been captured for one episode. He can't stay dead for more than an episode. He can't stay captured for more than an episode. Lita Alexander, our powerful telepath, Michael Garibaldi and Franklin, who are all on Mars for various reasons, are all able to break Sheridan out. There is a good scene where when Sheridan gets broken out, he just keeps shooting the guard because he's been so mind messed with. You're doing okay. And he's like, I'm better. And you're like, all right.
I really like that first kind of scene after they break out. They have Garibaldi there and they're trying to discern if it's like a thing scene. Is he still being controlled by Psycor? Can we trust him? And it's interesting because we have Franklin and we have Lita on Mars and we have all like this resistance military. And somehow the doctor and like the telepath get a hold of the guns and are holding all these resistance military down as they force him to do this thing on Garibaldi so they can prove he's, not being controlled by the Psycor anymore. I just did not believe for a second that like these two kind of civilian jobs would be able to overcome this entire military force on Mars.
Anyway, so yeah, we got the major Psycor plot where Lita reveals her power. Wonder if that's going to come up again in the near future. Sheridan gets freed back on Babylon 5. All of the aliens are like, oh man, they captured Sheridan. What if we all come together and sign a piece of paper to show him that he's cool so that we love him? They basically form the space equivalent of the United Nations to show support for Sheridan, which is pretty cool. It's interesting because Londo and Jakar, who are two people that should hate each other. Their races have been warring forever. One committed a genocide against the other one by teaming up with the devil. Got his eye chopped out, but they're besties now. And then they're like, Delenn, we didn't want to include you because we didn't want people to think it was just because you're sleeping with Sheridan. Anybody listening to this would be like, what's going on now for this new? But that's how all the alien races get together.
One minor thing I liked about this episode is that they did have a mention of the Earth Force ships getting the shadow technology added to them, which is what made them formidable enough to go against the White Star fleet, which is just Mimbarian Vorlon tech together. So I kind of like that they were able to raise those stakes in that small way, like for just these two episodes setting pretty much this entire battle up. That was a nice touch.
It's kind of just the one episode, like they're like, these things exist. Oh, okay. Here's a fight real quick. And then we're over with it versus it's not like all of Earth's ships after that, like in Endgame or anything like that are suddenly still the shadow enhanced ships. They go right back to just the regular Earth Force destroyers. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was like, oh, that's really cool. And reminded me of like the latest Star Wars where they're like, oh, these are Death Stars on Star Destroyers. These are the best awesome ships. And they're like, yeah, we only got like 10 of them and they're gone now. So don't worry about it.
Get past the snow clones. They didn't mean anything.
Yeah, it was a high stakes episode for 20 minutes. You know?
It's been a while since we had the mic saying, was it ever used again? Nope.
Nope.
And you have that. Like, this does not come up in season 5. There is a spinoff show where they're trying to build new weapons class. And at no point are they like, hey, Earth figured out shadow tech and included it. Do we want to do it? And then, of course, the major thing that happens, though, is Ivanova gives a nice speech. She says she's death and God, and she knows she's
death incarnate.
She says something like that. So Ivanova the second in command, who's taken over with Sheridan being gone and going, I don't care if Clark thinks he's going to slow us down with Sheridan, I'm going to keep going. Really summing up the modern workplace of if anybody's, replaceable. And she is mortally wounded in the fight against the shadows, sadly, with Marcus right there going, no. And then for whatever reason, when Sheridan comes back, he's able to see Ivanova. She's, John, they're lying to me. Tell it to me straight. And he's, yeah, you're going to die. Anyway, an old alien brought me back from the dead, and I used an old technology to bring people back from the dead. But anyway, sorry, Susan, it's a real bummer. There's no hope for you. He doesn't say all that.
They built it up for that because this is the most badassery she's ever been in any episode.
She'll be around. Okay, Mike, so we're caught up. We're ready to go. Just like Sheridan, barreling.
We both give up the game because now it's time for the Talia Winters Memory Quiz. Dan and Dre, are you boys ready to take part in the quiz?
Oh, yeah.
5 questions for the Babylon 5 episode Endgame. Here we go. Question 1. Category is Garibaldi's self-image. What code name does Garibaldi give to himself? Yes.
He's grumpy.
He is grumpy. That is correct. Didn't even get the multiple choice.
I was watching the episode. I was like, this is going to be a question.
Well, you're going to be very pleased with yourself when you hear the rest of the questions. So category the second is called Deja Vu. What code name does Garibaldi give to the Agamemnon when contacting the White Star Fleet?
Dre, Snow White.
Correct, Snow White. Third category is Vuja Dej. What code name does Garibaldi give to the Mars base when contacting the White Star Fleet?
Dan, the Wicked Queen?
Very close. I'll give you one more to finish that phrase. The Wicked Queen's...
castle.
You got it. Wicked Queen's castle. Goes to Dan. Oh, category the fourth. Garibaldi's pride. What code name does Garibaldi give...
Why, Mike? Why?
What code name does Garibaldi give as the go-ahead to attack the Mars base when contacting the White Star Fleet?
Dan, to break the mirror?
Yes, break the mirror. Dan got it right. And one more question for this episode. The category is military timing. When contacting the White Star Fleet, how soon does Garibaldi say that they can attack the Mars base? So your possible choices are A, noon, B, on Sheridan's command, C, when you see the whites of their boneheads, D, anytime they want. D is correct. You got it right away.
So I do want to, you know me, Mike, I love callbacks to prior episodes. I'm going to give a callback to the Hannah Michaels episode where I explicitly asked that, where I said, are you allowed to buzz in before the answer is there?
Yep.
If you could process of elimination it. All right.
Yep. You're allowed to. Okay. So that gives what? 3-2, I believe. We have a Dan. Yes. We got Dan at 3 and Dre at 2 questions going into our second quiz. Because we got 2 episodes, we have 2 quizzes. Are you guys ready for part 2 of the quiz?
Let's do it.
All right. Category the first, regions. And this is going to be from the episode Rising Star. What Earth Federation does acting president of Earth, Susanna Luchenko...
Russian Consortium.
I'm going to say that's very close. It's Dan, if you can say what he got wrong about that, you can steal this point.
I'm going to have to let Dre get this, I guess. I can't think of it.
Dre gets it then? It's the Russian Federation is what...
Ooh, it's not consortium. Okay, gotcha. Cool. All right. Yeah.
All right, but
I should have just said Russian and just not tried to be cute. All right, but I still win.
I got nothing.
Oh, Mike's okay. Whatever.
You know me. Yeah, all right. Enough. Question the second. Sheridan's intuition. What reason does Sheridan give as to why he didn't use Bester's love for Carolyn as one of the living telepath weapons? Yes, Dre.
He said he's gone through it before, and he explicitly says he wouldn't wish that on his worst enemy. Basically referencing Anna Sheridan. He's had someone else that's been taken from him.
Correct. One more point for Dre.
Yeah.
That was when I was looking forward to reading some of these multiple choice questions, but you will never hear them. On to the third one. Category is nerd numbers. Question. Out of the 100 telepaths they had recovered...
Dan,
yes.
30 were used on the ship.
30 were used on the ship. You got it. All right. Question the fourth. Category, Sheridan's desires. What is Sheridan's top demand in exchange for resigning from Earth Force?
Dre, amnesty.
Oh. Dan got it first.
Amnesty is true.
You got it.
This came to me.
I'm gonna go through that time, Mike. I'm gonna see when we're doing the edit.
There was a very clear Dan first, but unfortunately, you get the first edit, so I can't trust anything you send me.
All right, Dre from the future here. I did actually zoom in on the clips. I may even have a screenshot to send to Mike. Dan did get this by a tenth of the second, and it is actually really hard to hear on the audio files because I am so much louder than Daniel. You almost don't hear it, but numbers don't lie, clips don't lie. Point stands to Daniel. Mike has human ears, not Mimbari ears.
Last question. The category is Bone Share. What Mimbari tech does Delenn promise? Yes.
Gravity on ships. Gravity, I think she says gravity wells, but yeah, basically allowing ships to not have to have the spinning circles, which will help transport for Earth.
Artificial gravity is what she actually said and she had for the ship. So yes, that's right. We're going to totally tie it up as it should be with the brothers head to head. Well, that was an exciting quiz. I kind of knew you guys would probably know most of those. So it came down to the buzzer action.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Episode 20, Endgame, is wrapping up the Earth War. Sheridan, with a consortium of Earth ships and the White Star Fleet, takes back Mars, takes back Earth via some interesting methods we're going to talk. And then episode 21 is the victory lap, where our heroes get, you know, the necklaces around their neck, a la end of Star Wars, with, you know, Leta Alexander being our Chewbacca. She doesn't get the necklace. She makes that sound too, I'm sure. She actually has a Chewie moment where she's wearing like the hood like Chewie in a previous episode. It totally fits.
So some got caught in my gills. Sorry there for a moment.
All right, so, but on Endgame, Susan Ivanova almost dying, not dying in the fallout from it, because in the fight against the shadow vessels, the shadow Earth vessels that apparently she just wiped out entirely, they didn't save the tech, they didn't save the blueprints, they're gone, never to be seen or heard from again, but she dies as a result, and, you know, Marcus is wicked upset. Marcus has had an unrequited love for Susan Ivanova, one of the most telegraphed ones in history, even resulting in weird comedic beats like romantic comedy, sitcom, or there's movie beats.
The mistranslation stuff was like, that was the key beats from this, where he keeps saying in Mimbar that like he loves her and doesn't know that she actually learned Mimbar. Oh no, that was Three's Company. Oh,
and then he like buys her flowers, but she doesn't know they're from him and they're from someone else. And that someone else thinks of Ivanova, and who's she in love with? But that's been going on. And I wanted to address a comment and just kind of a nice thread for all three of us, which is Mike in the notes put, this never quite did it for you, or at least on the rewatch didn't. And I'm inclined to agree, and I have a lot of thoughts as to why. But I figured I'd let you go first, Mike, and then Dan and I can chime in.
Oh, yeah, Mike gets a turn to explain.
I was actually hoping that I could kind of get my own thoughts together as we talk about that, too, because, like, I really enjoy the acting of it. I thought that both the, I always forget her name, but the actor who played both Cole and Ivanova just did a really good job in their individual roles and kind of sold it well. What I thought was undercut was I just needed some more beats of them like being together, or her actually like requiting him at some point, or there needed to be something else go forward, because Cole kind of going against everything he's ever done with the Rangers. He's supposed to be very self-sacrificial for everybody in battle. And what he ends up doing is leaving his post in the battle to give his life for Ivanova. And that action itself, as much as he should be a sacrificial person wanting to give himself for someone else, I thought there were so many other ways that his character would have done it. I thought it would have been more powerful, because we've already established that the death machine that he uses to give his life for hers to save her can be kind of daisy chained together, like multiple people can use it. So why not find enough people who would like at least give part of their life force together to help this woman who just gave that amazing speech that I was talking about earlier? So yeah, that's kind of where my thoughts are. I'm trying to figure out exactly how much it worked on me, because yes to the acting, but no to like the beats we actually got.
I enjoyed that a lot. I think to me, the relationship buildup of Ivanova and Marcus was just like, it was slow. It was always in the background. It was always the B plot. I would almost even say Lanier's love for Delenn was always more subtle and ever present. Like throughout all the season, I think at one point he even tells like Marcus, I love her, but I know that she'll never love me. So like, I will serve her, whatever. And it's okay. So that's the real unrequited love story of the art, where they kind of seem like, okay, yeah, they're going to get together. Like they're kind of having this like, he flirts, she puts him away kind of thing. And so the line in the show, when there's nothing on Babylon 5 that can help her, and then he was like, why would you say it like that? In my head, when I first heard that, not remembering the, you know, alien death machine torture device, actually, which is what it is. But I, for some reason, thought that meant, oh, there's something on Earth that can help her, and Marcus is going to go to Earth before he's going to risk that, which I kind of thought would have been a better way for him to be like, okay, he's going to like fuck the invasion up and like head to Earth beforehand. and, you know, do that. But once I remembered, oh yeah, there's like that machine from like season two that they did this thing with, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, makes sense. It's the Romeo and Juliet moment.
Yeah. I'll do the full beat by beat because it's only a couple of scenes. Marcus abandons Delenn and Lanier via a very funny method where he calls them both to another ship and they show up and they say, you called for me. And they're like, what are you talking about? And then Marcus bolts with a ship. It's worth noting that this isn't a fighter. It's a fully manned vessel. So the entire crew of this ship listens to Marcus's orders to leave. And then I also noted that we have just the benefit of the show telling us that, oh, they're, for some reason they can't reach Babylon 5 at Mars. Then no one is able to communicate to either the ship or to Babylon 5 in time to beat Marcus, because Marcus is going back to Babylon 5. And what happened is when he is lamenting, Ivanova's going to die, she would rather go out in battle. She'd rather be on a ship going into the war. And they're telling him, maybe, but what if she just can enjoy the last couple of days, goes, you know, can go to her home, go to Babylon 5. And he's saying what we just said, why would she go to Babylon 5? Nothing there's going to help her. And Lanier's, well, oh, I've said too much. And I didn't go out of my way to rewatch that episode, but I can't even remember if Lanier would have explicitly known.
I don't remember him being a big part of that.
He's high enough up, right? He's connected enough with Delenn. He would know, but it's just, it's odd that he did that. So Marcus realizes there might be technology. He goes through Stephen Franklin's encrypted files. I did actually enjoy some Easter eggs there, because if you notice the dancer on Walkabout, he had to, did you catch that, Mike? He had to do her time
no,
of death.
I didn't. No,
because when he's scanning, what he's looking for is secret files of Franklin. So these are not public files, and they are ones related to deaths. And so the very first one he pulled up was like dancer age 36.
Oh, of course.
And he skips it. That's actually a brilliantly messed up callback. There's a machine at the start that shows up in season one, is reused once in season two. It was originally designed as a torture device. It pulls the life force, very Princess Bride-y, out of the person. But the alien race that made it, who is now deceased, the cool side effect they gave it is you can take that life and give it to someone else. And so a human doctor discovered it and is, I can use this device to cure people. And she is dying of a terminal disease. So she's this wonder doctor who can cure people, because she's going, I'm dying anyway, I can cure you. And this is very much in line with what we've learned in the show. Sheridan allegedly died, and Lorian, one of the oldest aliens, is, I can't give your life back, but I can give you some of my energy. And if you're alive enough, right, that can sustain you. So Sheridan's got 20 years. We've been established in this universe that we do have this weird energy transference that is possible between beings. And Babylon 5 has a device that does it, that Franklin found in season one, is like, we're never going to come back to this until it can be more stable. And my sardonic comment, because there's another plot line we'll get to, it's like, he had to be too busy working on weaponizing telepaths from shadow technology to deal with this earth-shattering cure-all device that he discovered that he's had for 4 years and done nothing with, even in the middle of a war.
Yeah, if he was really that protective, he should have developed a better encryption on his files.
I was going to say, this is the second time people have had to break into his encrypted files, the first time being like his Walkabout, and like Ivanova had to go through his files during then, and then...
Yeah, everyone's gone through his files. Yeah. Garibaldi did it at one point too, when he was with the STEM stuff.
Yeah, we have two countering things. We heard Marcus must have broken 100 things or whatever, right? Versus
said half a dozen. Like,
ooh, you're right.
Much.
Versus when Franklin gives up his password, he's, you know, what is it? It was the Underground Railroad, and it's, I'm blanking her name, but it's a major figure. And I'm like,
Harriet Tubman.
Harriet Tubman. You're like, that's your, okay. So
and Abraham Lincoln.
Nice callback as well. There are multiple Underground Railroad callbacks on the show. Listen to previous episodes if you got to check this out to hear more. Okay, so Marcus breaks into Franklin's files, realizes there's this miracle technology, beelines it to Babylon 5, breaks in, gets the device, is able to do this because everybody else is distracted with the, you know, retaking Earth. They can't do anything. They couldn't send a Star Fury. They couldn't send one white star to follow him and leave. Nope, couldn't. Can't be done. So Marcus goes back, gives up his entire life energy to basically heal Ivanova. he dies, he says, "You'll never know."
She's just like, in time for her to leave Babylon 5, the show, altogether.
And that was one of the rough parts, is out of short show canon. First, they didn't know they were going to be renewed for season 5 initially. When they found out they were going to be renewed for season 5, they sent them to a couple shows like Community, Scrubs. They get a renewal. If the actors get into tense negotiations, it usually just ends. And that's what happened with Claudia Christensen. She basically didn't like her deal or whatever. When we're talking about why the unrequited thing didn't work, that's actually part of it, which is he does this sacrifice for a major character, and then they both leave. So just as a viewer, we're left very unfulfilled as like a resolution of that, right? The sacrifice meant nothing. Maybe there's something to that. Also, shout out to Carl Wolf, prior guest who had watched the whole show, who brought up that the Talia Winters Ivanova romance just wound up not working and being heavily, you know, I don't know if censored is the right word, but clearly JMS was not allowed to do as much as he wanted to. In fact, it's not until Talia Winters, Andrea Thompson, demands off the show in her write-off episode, where we discover she's a sleeper agent, just like Garibaldi, everybody should know, that she actually gets to act some, and we actually see her like in, like, she wakes up and Ivanova's gone, or Ivanova wakes up.
Yeah, she wakes up, Ivanova's gone, and it was like, ooh, someone on the station is a sleeper agent. It's like, ooh, is it Ivanova? I think, especially because she's the one that's, I won't trust anyone to probe my mind and give me the signal or whatever.
Yeah, I'm setting that up.
Yeah, so that's the other part of it, is realizing that relationship was there and we kind of never got it, and we just kind of got grafted one of the most tropey ones. Like, we had a very subversive, awesome potential relationship that was clearly kiboshed early. And now that we've done a full rewatch, Mike, and full introspection, we like learned a lot about, talked a lot about. So I think those two, for me, when we're saying like it didn't quite land this time, I think that's why is... And then the final one would be like, you know, I'm 40, I've seen a million romantic comedies. So when I was younger, it's, oh my God, the unrequited love, the cool hero, he's a nerd, but he's going to get the cool girl. Like, of course that plays when I'm young and I'm an adult. And I'm like, I've seen 100 versions of that. So like, for me, when we're saying, why didn't this land? Those were kind of the three reasons for me, Mike, if I was going to give reasons.
Well, there's two versions of this, and we've been kind of talking around it the whole time here. The Lanier Delenn is kind of almost echoes this. It's like JMS was taking two shots at a very similar dynamic between things. And in both cases, it does also kind of have something that happens very quick, almost out of nowhere, that resolves it towards the end of season 5, we'll get to.
And I would say what's funny, I didn't like it at the time, but the Lanier plot actually played to me, and I can see why this one didn't. And the final wrap up is, you know, so Marcus dies in the middle of the big battle where, spoiler, they do take back Earth. Ivana wakes up. Mike, you're so right. You're just like, oh my God, she is never, ever going to be able to handle like the trauma of this. And that is true. We actually get a flashback episode at the end of next season. And, you're 30 years out and you've never made any establishing relationship with any other human. Wonder what happened. Did everybody you love die?
Yeah, this was just such a huge traumatic thing to happen to her, especially after all we know about her mother and her father, her family history with the telepaths. This is just like crushing to happen to her. And again, right after her big badass episode where she got, oh yeah, Ivanova is the shit. And then this immediately happens and takes her out.
And if I recall, I think it's established that she like destroyed the machine too. So that now the machine is destroyed. That's at least nice.
Yeah. I hope she took the machine out in like a kind of Office Space style. Get the copy machine out in the field.
And then, you know, she kind of tragically ended saying, of course she knew Marcus loved her, but she wasn't ready for love. And then she says, all love is unrequited, which is an interesting line. And then later Lanier, who hears all, as we've discovered, says it to Delenn, and Delenn's, you know, that's not true, right? And he's like, sure, I gotcha. I hope this doesn't go anywhere. Yeah, so that storyline ends up, we might have some sprinklings in. So Garibaldi, with all the code names, is prepping everything. And the way it's going is they're taking back Mars and then they're going to take back Earth. It's a consortium of defecting Earth ships and the White Star fleet. And we do have the League of Non-Aligned Worlds, what they'll be called, the Alliance, in the near future. They're holding like court. So essentially they're not going to attack, but they'll come in for defense. That may come up in the future. This is all the other alien races that fought in the Shadow War. So they're going to take out Mars, and they've got Garibaldi with code names and Disney references and Daffy Duck. He does both, man. He does Disney and WB, just like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Garibaldi prepping everything, and what they've got is a very nice payoff to a lot of storylines, which is Garibaldi on Mars with the assistance of Leta and Franklin is smuggling 30 telepaths that were infected by the shadows with a main device flash virus that makes them run as the central processing unit for shadow ships. And if you put them in a not shadow ship, they just instinctively grab the technology, take it over, and shut it down. So, you know, have a fleet of 40 Earth ships at Mars waiting for Sheridan to take them out. And Sheridan has 30 telepaths ready to disable ships.
Yeah. It took me a couple watches to realize, wait, where was that? Where did that step happen? How they actually got the telepaths on the Earth ships? I thought they could have made that a little more clear, like they had a liaison. It was just like one line. It's like, yeah, we have a liaison, someone in the Earth government. And it's, no, I want to know how that happened. How did you get someone to defect and physically figure out how to get these people on board the most important defense in Earth history at this point?
Especially because the person that they're talking to is, oh, I wasn't expecting this. I thought you wanted me to slip like weapons or like a bomb on. And they were like, no, they would detect that. But they're like, but they're not going to detect you bringing like a cryo frozen person.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, that's fine. Yeah. I don't know why we would want that right before a battle, but let's go ahead. And it's got a giant like Psycor label on the outside too, which like, not that it's super important, but the whole thing with President Clark was he was putting a lot of Psycor telepaths in positions of power, which was kind of the whole like Garibaldi's, you know, sleeper agent deal, was that Psycor was like manipulating President Clark to the point where like they were trying to put themselves into the most position of power. And
it was
like,
kind of the flip side, and that's why, just to clarify for the listeners, right, Psycor is the consortium. I keep using the word, Mike.
Consortium, just in your mouth feel. You just go with it, Dre. Go with it.
So Psycor is, you know, the big governing body of all the telepaths, and Bester is this big bad that wants telepaths to be in control of everything. And the Shadows, ancient race, didn't like telepaths because they're weak to them. So they were using the Psycor to suppress them. Bester wants to power them up. And then Clark's also saying, hey, I can use the Psycor as kind of my military police. So we had this now two-way, but like a 3/4-way fight.
Well, it's a four-way fight from within Earth, I was thinking, too, because it's like most of these political things, you have a three-way triangle of things. And this one, you have the Clark government, who's inward fighting for control with the Psycor, who they're kind of helping each other. You also have the Shadows, who also want to not be with the Psycor, but want to control Earth in a way, and that they're giving them technology to help this blockade. And the fourth corner of it is what we've heard in the last couple episodes on Mars about the megacorporations, who only give Clark so much power and have begun to regret it, seeing as how he's gone right into military law. So it's interesting that, like, we know enough about all these factions. And that's one of the things that Babylon 5 has done better than most shows politically for me, even like Game of Thrones. Like, I really know each of these races, how their political structure works internally, and what the forces are in between them. Think of the Minbari. You immediately think of the castes, the things they've gone in between, the different leaders shifting around, all the Centauri, everything we've had with Cartasia rising up. Like, we know the system of governments better than we know some of the people who live on Centauri. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that all this that we're talking about, wanted to bring that up as something they did really good, given like the limited amount of time he had to tell this huge story, was how well we know these machinations in government.
Absolutely. And then we get a Return of the Jedi homage where the Resistance takes out a bunker. They have a sleeper agent that's going to get shadow telepaths placed on all of these ships. And we kind of do have enough buildup from all of the Mars goings on this past season to be like, yeah, they would have the connections. And it's a funny two-parter because Clark thinks I'm going to have this giant fleet of ships waiting at Mars for Sheridan as a trap. Mars has the big blockade, so they would probably have needed reinforcements from Mars once they got there. but, you know, we've got who knows more about who. So we've heard in past Clark's got sleeper agents that aren't real defectors in Sheridan's army. There are, you know, spies and stuff on Mars that we have. And so we are going to find out, of course, that, you know, Sheridan wins. We will say at what cost, because we do get a nice verbal back and forth with Franklin and the person helping them. As you were saying, she was like, I thought you were smuggling weapons or something. And he's, no, so here's what we got. We have a bunch of telepaths that were messed up by the shadows. And it turns out if you put them near technology, they mess up technology. So we snuggled them onto the ship, and they're going to shut down all the ships and, you know, probably correctly get killed in the process. And the person's like, are you kidding me? What are you doing? And they do have an interesting philosophical back and forth. Franklin justifying it, saying, hey, there wasn't technology to cure him on Babylon 5. There wasn't a miracle cure device that I forgot about.
There was no way
I could cure him on Babylon 5. So we had to get him back to Earth. And so if we didn't win this war with Earth, they were dead anyway. And then, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, where it's here we lose up to 30 telepaths. If we'd had to go on a head-to-head fight, we would lose thousands on the big battleships alone, let alone the Crossfire. So they kind of justify it, but I enjoyed the point of, wait a minute, the shadows did this horrible stuff, which is why you fought them. And now you are literally using shadow technology the exact way the shadows did, which is what the big bad did last episode, which is how we knew he was bad.
Yeah, I really like this moment for Franklin. It really showed his, like, just character. I hesitate to say growth, but just his change over time, because in just about every plot line, he's the doctor who says, you can't do that. Human life. I made a vow to always protect any life. And so this is him figuring, getting to that position, like what pushes him to that place where he's, yep, this is what we have to do.
We get a cutback. Sheridan's on, you know, the Agamemnon, his old ship, an Earth ship. So he's going to retake Earth as the captain of his old ship. And we get a funny, you know what, Patton, who's the other one? Rommel Patton, I think, in the movie Patton. There is General Lethcourt has been brought in, and he is...
This guy.
He is definitely that guy from, I'm trying to remember, but you've seen the actor that's played General Lethcourt, and I'll look him up in just a second, and lots of stuff.
He has general face. Yeah, he has mean general face. Mm-hmm.
He does come back in the beginning movie of Babylon 5. But we have another general who's, I've been brought in because I trained Sheridan. I know how he thinks. And yeah, you know, it's funny because he may be right. He may have some good points. I may agree with him, but I wouldn't do what he did. This is going to be fun to have a fight with him. I certainly hope it's just going to, you know, it's kind of a weird.
What he says is like, I'm from the old school where, like, no matter what, you would never turn against a soldier would never turn against his government. I taught him everything he knows. I know how he thinks. And now I have to kill all of them. And it's like,
it's not just and now I have to kill him. It's, and now I'm going to have to kill him and everyone around him. And he's just like, has that like wolf gleam in his eye while he's saying it.
So anyway, the telepaths are on the ship. Leta Alexander goes outside in her Chewbacca outfit, like the hooded thing. She's got a new custom-made head rig that Franklin's prepped for her, and she uses her, you know, eye-gooey powers.
It's to control the goo in the eyes more throughout her telepath.
To wake up all 30 telepaths on the ship, this has been established. We thought at first, these telepaths that were infected with this mind virus, Franklin's like, I can't cure them. Leta's able to talk to one, and he's, hey, maybe I'll be able to use you to help cure them. He's a change of plans.
Or
how about instead of curing them, we make them an unstoppable weapon for an ancient race. How's that sound, Leta? And she's like, yeah, that's what I do. So 30 telepaths wake up. I think 20 of them take over immediately. 5 of them were told they're working, and, you know, the other 5 might have gotten lost in transit. So this was a 40-ship fleet that is now brought down. And the wake-up effect of these telepaths was really cool. Leta's standing outside. She's kind of having a mind thing of all of these things. We've seen some of these telepaths before. They wake up. They look really wicked, and they're a shadow-like thing. We get a nice little montage of them. That's pretty creepy. And then we start hearing ships are going down. Lethcourt's doing his general voice. Yeah. Get down there, whatever.
I like that we get one more Return to the Superman 3 scene with all the machinations and then all the wires and stuff coming out of somebody, like old makeup effects. Love it.
And then in the middle of that, when Sheridan sees the ships start going down, he's like, cool, of the remaining ones, you know, target the weapons, target the engines. We're just going to disable them. But yeah, now, you know, it's turned from the good guys were outnumbered to they're going to win. And Left Court remains funny because Sheridan starts attacking. And they go, well, should we engage? He's like, nah, he's trying to like back us against the wall. We hold our positions. But Sheridan wouldn't do this unless he had an ace up his sleeve. What could it be? And then half the fleet goes down. It's, oh,
that could have been an ace up the sleeve.
That's a pretty good ace. Good guys are able to take down the Mars thing. And they're like, and now on to Earth. So the alien force that has decided Sheridan's their puppy and they feel bad for him is going to stick behind and hold Mars. The rest of the fleet's going to go forward to Earth and take it down. And we do get a pretty badass Sheridan speech. Just worth noting, a callback to a previous episode. Logan Trent noted that early in the season, Sheridan has to tell the Shadows and the Vorlons to leave. And Logan's take was, this speech might have been a little lackluster. Not horrible, but given the gravitas, might not have been as good. But at this point, when Sheridan makes it to Earth to take it back and say, you're following illegal orders, Clark is wrong, we're coming to take it back, come on, you know, listen to the better side of yourself. He does give a pretty passionate speech as they're taking out the Earth defenses, you know, trying to take down all the ships that are coming in.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was during this, you know, we are doing this for this reason. Like, all of Sheridan's speeches to me are like the, I'm on my soapbox. Everyone, this is my last cry. And an episode later, it's like, this is my last cry for help. But he's really good at that. And I think definitely, I know originally, like Sinclair being like the captain, I was like, yeah, he just, the difference of them as actors, I'm really glad that Sheridan came in and was forced to come in. And then to compare it to Deep Space Nine, because, you know, what's the point of me being on the show if I'm not going to crap all over Deep Space Nine? I always found Sisko, yeah, he was fine as a commander, but he always had this like really creepy grin at the end of episodes that made me think. And again, it's because I had the Game of Thrones brain where I was like, he's a double agent. Like, he's got something under his sleeve. He's really working for the bad guys. But that was just the way that guy smiled. So it's just something where Sisko was a good captain. But I think the whole thing with him is he was a modern like Picard. Like, yeah, we'll follow him. Everyone, he's got the loyalty. He always does the right thing. He is like the white knight where, you know, like you're saying, you know, like Sheridan is like the chess player that knows, okay, we can't beat a shadow one-on-one, let's use gravity. Oh, we can't beat him one-on-one, let's use, you know, hyperspace or whatever.
This was slightly anticlimactic in the correct way. Sheridan comes up to a fascist with a big consortium of ships, says people do the right thing, and the fascist sprawls crazy notes to himself. I'm guessing it might have also related to a passcode. So he scrawled, what does it say?
The ascension of the ordinary man.
He's been all work, no playing, The Shining, writing that over and over. And in that, he has circled the letters such that we get scorched Earth.
Yep.
Some combination of those was probably the code to Earth's defenses. So he's turned, you know, Earth's defenses were trying to stop this oncoming fleet, which they are losing to. He's turned it on towards Earth, given it a 10-minute timer. How convenient for sci-fi purposes. And then kills himself. Right. So it's nice that it's anticlimactic in the sense that in the line of fascists, when enough people stand up, it doesn't end with a big battle and, you know, bravado. Kind of ends with a whimper. And that, at least historically, has been the way it has gone.
So, it's one of the things that hit me about this whole sequence from Sheridan coming in is how I, as like a citizen of Earth at this time, would have been like processing the events. Because, you know, I kind of know ISN is a joke. It's propaganda, but we live under this fascist government that we kind of have to go along with. And they've reported that they've captured the leader of the main resistance. And they've been putting because he was just in the last two episodes captured and got back and went right to Mars. So all we know is that we've been fed all of these propaganda and lies about this guy that they've captured and they have under wraps. And all of a sudden, oh no, he's got this huge fleet out of nowhere. There is no way that the Clark regime actually gave something out on ISN that said that he was freed. As far as any of the people of Earth know, he's still undergoing treatments.
And worth noting that Babylon 5 had tried to do, using Epsilon 3, a counter-propaganda thing properly. Ivanova was reading real news. She was in charge of the fleet going, and we haven't seen communication. So I agree with that point, which is, yeah, if Sheridan just suddenly shows up and says, hey, I'm here, everybody listen. But the bigger thing that seemed to have happened that was important is that, like, the senators, enough people in control went, okay,
they say in the next episode a lot, like, he has high ratings. There's a lot of people who support what he did. And I think what actually happened was, as soon as he showed up, it woke up a decent percentage of people on Earth that says, yeah, that all that stuff I've suspected was all propaganda was just like, this is the nail in the coffin. It really is.
And yeah, so Clark goes nuts, commits suicide, you know, Hitler in his bunker, has written a note. A bunch of people from the government are coming, you know, say, hey, okay, you're under arrest. The military is all against you. Every alien race is against us. Jig is up, right? And I did note when we were talking the Cisco Cemetery Sinclair replacement, what I thought of rewatching this time, Mike, is the big start event of Babylon 5 was the Battle of the Line, the Earth-Mimbari War. So Earth, being the young race, up-and-comer, inadvertently attacked one of the oldest, most powerful races in the galaxy. That race got infuriated and almost decimated Earth. And the last thing they did is they did a sneak attack on Earth, jump points opening all around Earth. And our big captain, Sinclair, was one of the last humans that just sees it and is, oh my God. Now, if that captain had been the one, if we'd kept the same captain, then the end of the show is that Earth captain with Mimbari showing up around Earth, not this time to destroy it, but to save it, which would have been really interesting symmetry that did, you know, doesn't quite land because it's not the same person. But that was an interesting point, right? The show starts with Earth and Mimbari fighting, with Mimbari almost destroying Earth, with Earth and Mimbari combined surrounding Earth to save it.
It ties in very well with the whole souls of Earth people in Mimbari. They're together. They had to slowly come over to that. But yeah, it's just another, like, way without pushing that over the edge to take that theme into the show.
And so Clark realizes it's done. He, instead of having defenses fight against the oncoming fleet, they're pointed at Earth and he's gone. And it's now a, you know, mission in a video game. Can the White Star fleet destroy Earth's defense in enough time before it goes off and destroys all of Earth? They say, I think 40% of Earth is at risk. They get most of it, but there is one left that is pointed at the eastern seaboard of North America, which, if we were going by 2000 standards, you know, that would be DC. That would likely be, you know, the center of power. No ship is close enough except for Sheridan's ship, but Sheridan's ship has lost its weapons. So Sheridan has to do the hero thing. Give me everything you got. Ramming speed.
I mean, every time you get into a spacecraft, you know, you're risking your life. Let's be real. So this is just par for the course at this point.
And Sheridan so wanted to yell out that ramming speed line. You know, he's just like going for it every time. Oh, I get to do a suicide mission. All right.
This isn't even headcanon for me anymore, Mike. This is in-show lore. If Delenn was there, she would have been completely turned on. Because they just, Delenn and Sheridan just have a fetish for, like, war and battle.
And then Delenn's like, oh, ramming speed.
She was watching. Yeah, she was like, John. And it's, you could read that as her being like, oh, no, but I'm agreeing with you, Mike. When she says, oh, John. I was like, ah, that's canon. That's in lore. We've talked about the hit or miss nature of the CGI, you know, the shadow Earth hybrids. CGI wise, imagery wise, this is awesome, which is Sheridan's going to ram this thing. Left court on, I forget what the ship's name was called.
The Apollo,
thank you. Hops out of hyperspace at just the right time, blows up the fence thing right as Sheridan is coming through it. So, right, you know, it's going through fire, but these ships can survive at least fire on the outside. But they managed to live. And that image is used, I believe, in like the start of season 5. That was like, I watched it a few times. That is a really cool image. So Deus Ex Machina, quite literally, the guy that Sheridan almost took out. And then they, you know, they do the classic thing that like all enemies on this show do. They like banter back and forth of, ah, man, remember when you almost killed me in that fight? Ah, yeah, you stinker. Ah, we're good.
Just following orders.
Remember, I wanted to kill you and everybody around you. No, not just the people you were with. I said everybody around you.
And I know the importance of, like, he wants to be on it. It's important that they're on Earth ships. Like, they talked about that throughout this season a lot. Of, we could go take all of these Membari ships and just, we could just destroy Earth if we really wanted to. Like, we're a strong enough race that we could do that. But it's more important that, like, ships are seen coming to the rescue of Earth for the sake of it not looking like an alien invasion, things like that. So I keep thinking, like, man, the White Stars, they wouldn't even need any of these Earth ships.
And the White Stars have Membari on them, and it's more, it doesn't, it's,
I like it, it's very thematic too, because a lot of the, one of the big themes that I got out of the whole Clark war with Sheridan the Alliance is Sheridan finding other ways to solve problems that aren't direct. Like, they were very much kept going back to, yeah, we have to let the Earth deserters in. We have to figure out a way to incorporate with them and then give them the opportunity to go away if that's not what they want. Like, it shows there's another way than just, like, coming in and overwhelming with force, even if you have it.
So back to storytelling. Sheridan takes back Earth. Ah, we're all buds. He turns himself in. He meets with, like, the acting president of Earth, Susanna Luchenko, who's Russian. JMS callback, of course she is. And we did a lot of this on the quiz where Sheridan's, hey, if you give amnesty to my crew, I'll resign. And, you know, and they're doing the nice thing, right? Hey, we'll give you full benefits. You resign. You say all the right stuff.
I always thought this was, like, the weirdest one. Like, obviously, the actor who plays, like, the Russian president, she was very, like, I understand she's Russian is obviously her first language, but just how she talked was like, oh, my God. Well, half of us wanted to give you the Medal of Honor and the other half wanted to shoot you. And I think a good middle is to do both. And I'm like, okay, just get to the point already, lady.
Yeah, it was and a little then, belabored with how she did her sort of speech pattern. Yeah.
It was like, so it was somehow like overacted, but obviously, you know, I was like, okay, I don't watch Babylon 5 because I'm like, okay, you know, Meryl Streep's in it or anything. But then the part that they're like, you know, we really have to come down on you for, like, insurrection and all this stuff. And I understand, yeah, technically, but also president was going to destroy the world. Like, it's one thing to be like, you didn't follow orders, and that was kind of the right thing to do in the long run. It's another thing to be like, you didn't follow orders, and as a result, you saved everyone's life.
And that wasn't the first time, because they didn't start doing it until he started bombing civilians. So Clark has been systematically attacking Earth people.
Yeah.
So when Sheridan's, yeah, I took up arms against Clark, who did it. It's weird to be like, they did it first.
Well, we're seeing extreme versions of this right now in the U.S. today, though, where it's, you know, we're just getting through these crazy, like, things get escalate and escalate. And, well, what are we going to do about it? Oh, no one's going to do anything about it. Okay, this is just the way it is now. This is what this is kind of showing in this episode.
It is weird watching the show. And I know I've been following, you know, every episode you guys have put out. And I feel like it's every episode. You're like, it's weird how much this mirrors current life in society. And I'm like, that is very upsetting to think about.
Yeah, because it's a show about how fascism takes over and what can you do about it.
And it's not an overnight process. And it's, you know, something that, like, oh, they did this and they control the media. They say this and people buy into it. You're like, oh, wow, this is legitimately what's happening right now.
Yeah. And they took propaganda head on. I like that they did that in the show.
But I did want to wonder, like, what happened to the general left court? Because, like, he technically also broke the rules. Yeah, like, he came in and joined Sheridan at the last second. So is he also going to get punishment, even though he was in charge of the fleet to stop him?
Again, like, seeing what's going on right now, what are the rules anymore? You're in that situation where the fascist government took over and could do whatever they want. He can just say, well, I was just following orders. Well, what side of that is everybody going to be on? And it's just like, where does the Plinko chip lie at the end? And that's kind of what I was going to ask you guys, like, how you liked how Luchenko's performance was, because I agree with you. It's like, there's something missing. It was a little too stilted to get across, but it seemed really well written. And, like, what she was trying to get across of, hey, despite you being this hero who saved all of Earth, now we're back into business as usual. And I have to be like, all right, who tipped over the apple cart? I don't got to upset the mega corporations now that I really have to worry about that we're not even allowed to talk about. So it's like, I felt that was kind of in there with a performance.
It's Tuesday again. We got to get back to work. You know, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You just got out of prison from what my government just put you in prison and tried to brainwash you. You got out and saved us there. Yeah, it goes pretty far.
All of the bigs. But so as a result of all of that stuff, I was curious about, okay, it makes sense. That is what would happen. And then as well, wondering like, what are the consequences for the people that were following orders? Because obviously there's a lot of, you know, symmetry to, you know, World War II, I think, is J. Michael Crispin is like a big historian in that regard. And we're not really talking about like the Nuremberg trials here. When are we going to talk about all the people that were just following orders? So even Ivanova mentions that in the previous episode when they're like, we have, you know, there are people who didn't really defect. And she's, I don't care. When we put you up in front of a tribunal, they'll decide whether or not, like, we go easy on you.
Is it unjust to follow unjust orders? It's like that moral question as it comes down to.
Well, I mean, don't look up Operation Paperclip and how we got to the moon if you want that. And that would have been a real interesting thing to explore in season 5, which, spoiler alert, they do not. Well, Sheridan is dealing with that. And, you know, Sheridan does, I'll do the right thing. And you're like, ah, cool. He's going to get a hero send off, but it's bittersweet. And we're all noting. And where you were asking, Mike, like, where you land, this felt very on the nose of almost the second normalcy has returned. It's, well, we got to play by these weird political rules where you don't hurt each other's feelings. And that's super on the nose. Back on Babylon 5, Delenn is arranging kind of the culmination of what Sheridan started. So we had the League of Non-Aligned Worlds, which was a collection of alien races. And then we had the major players, the Narn, Earth, Minbari, and Vorlon, that were kind of the Security Council. Sheridan got everybody on the same side for the Shadow War. At the end of the Shadow War, Sheridan got everybody to agree to an alliance. And then in the middle of the Earth War, Jakar and Londo of Narn and Centauri got everybody to agree to back Earth. And so we kind of, you know, it's interesting because this is played as a big deal. We're kind of getting this culmination of everybody joining sides. And we also kind of get a send off to some of our major alien players. So Londo and Jakar, who have been bitter rivals that have slowly become friends. Although I got to give this one to Deep Space Nine. Hannah brought this up, Daniel. I think at every point, Jakar should be like, fuck you. And he does that once. And Londo's, you really hurt my feelings when you said that. I've tried to be nice. Sure, I did a deal with the devil. Sure, I did a genocide on your people that involved breaking war crimes. I then used you to get rid of those people. So really,
that was a killer scene. I love how he brought in the drink with them. And it's like, just have a drink with me. Jakar, you just need to have a drink with me. It's okay. And Jakar just pours it out right in front of him, too.
He pours it back into the bottle.
Pours it in the bottle. No, like I reject it in every way with an action. Yeah. I love when shows do that. Here's a representation and here's an action you can perform to show like how your character feels.
Mwah. Yeah, Jakar got real like, cool, real quick, like, I'm spiritually enlightened. We will never forget what happened to us. We have to be the better people to, like, it's Friday. Yeah, how you doing, Rondo? Like, you and me, buddy. Let's go fishing.
That's a weird one, because, forgiveness, but you're like, I don't quite know that. So all of the alien race are like, hey, let's finalize this. Sheridan, we all made this coalition for Earth. Let's make, essentially, you know, the United Nation, where all of us are going to team up together. All of the alien races are on board. We're going to use the White Star Fleet as a kind of shield
force. As a show of an intimidation to everybody. And no, the White Star Fleet is like, holy shit, this plane's all over. This is the worst way you can announce.
Well, we'll get the full thing, which is they're all agreeing to this as Sheridan's agreeing to leave. And so Sheridan does his speech where he steps down and sorry, I took up arms against Earth. And then Delenn comes in and is like, but no, we're not finished yet, though, by the way. All of us have agreed By the way, in the midst of this, I'm just glossing over, but a lot happens quickly via just words, where Londo, we're established, he's going to become emperor, but that's next season's problem, and we've known it's happened. So everybody's joined together, they're all happy, and then Londo's told, hey, you have to go be emperor. The importance of this, I would say, is everybody's getting the happy ending, and in the middle of the big happy ending, we are basically reminded that Londo is cursed, which I'm fine with. So Delenn steps up and goes, hey, after the Earth War, all the alien races got on board. We're going to form an alliance and we're going to invite Earth to join. It's incredibly beneficial. We have the most advanced fleet in the galaxy. We are going to, you know, be a buffer between you and everybody. You can do whatever you want. We're not going to tell you what to do, but we are an information police, right? If you're going to attack your neighbors, we'll know. You'll know, they'll know, everybody will know, right? We won't attack on behalf of anybody, but we'll kind of keep the peace. Earth want to join us. And, you know, our stilted president kind of goes, maybe, what's in it for me? And they're like, what if we give you some better technology? And she's like, sold. And then she goes, but...
Ooh, gravity wells.
She goes, but who's going to lead you then? Do I report to Delenn? And like... And it's revealed that Sheridan has been voted in the first president of the new alliance. And it's briefly paid for laughs where someone in the military is, you son of a bitch, where are those amnesty papers? Sheridan, I already gave them away and I'm on to my next job. But it's kind of just, you know, it's kind of happy ending. And that felt like minor force conflict in an episode that really is, you know, the little word bubbles at the end of a movie that's like, Mike Slater went on to become, you know, the new lead singer of Pearl Jam version 5. And Daniel Alvarez was the first guy in space or whatever, right? Yeah, that's really what this episode is.
Yeah, this whole episode is just like kind of a little victory lap forever. There's a scene where Garibaldi comes in and rescues Lee from Mars and stuff too.
Garibaldi's the last one we... And let's wrap the Earth one real quick, because I was going to say, you didn't mention it, Mike, which is they announce it. The White Stars do the Blue Angels overhead fly, which is more terrifying than anything. They're like, welcome to the Alliance. The most advanced fleet is just going to fly right over your capital. Cool.
Unchecked. Yeah. No, no one got a heads up on this, so it kind of looks like an invasion, but whatever.
Yeah, that's totally a power move on Delenn's part, doing that.
I did want to note just a point you were bringing up about propaganda people. An interesting note in show is Delenn talks about the Shadow War and the first ones and all that. And I do just wonder how behind Earth is on the news for this, because there was a previous episode. They go to Mars and say, hey, we're sorry we didn't come help you like we said we would. We were finishing the Shadow War. Everybody was at Coriana 6. And they're like, Shadow who? And so when Delenn's saying, now that the first ones have left, does that mean anything to the Earth people? Because how much of that information was getting out?
And I was also curious, with the president, like, for whatever reason, I always thought that he was going to have one of those like collarbone parasite suckers.
Yeah, the keepers.
Yeah, the keepers, because like we've seen them pop up a couple times now with the Regent on Centauri Prime. So like things like that where it's okay, we know those are around. So part of me was like, oh. And when I was watching the episode and you saw President Clark kept writing the phrase over and over, but he just circled certain letters to write out scorched earth. I was like, one, that why would he leave a note? You know, like, why would he be like, this is my plan, I'm out? If he just committed suicide, they would have no idea that he, like, that 10-minute timer would be like, oh, that's already in effect. We didn't know what was happening until we realized they started pointing at Earth already. And part of me was like, oh, I wonder if he had that thing and that he was circling them, because that's as much control as he could do. Mm-hmm. As he could write out a phrase that it wouldn't register has the letters, and as slowly circles letters, that thing would be like, oh, I see what you're doing. Or maybe he got drunk or whatever, because that's what Londo had to do to prevent that from being taking over his like physical, you know, his limbs and stuff.
I like that, because that comes out of the story a bit too. Anything there where you can take an element that was presented to you and boom, tie it in. Because at the way they present it, it's just like, he's just ravings of a madman at the end.
Yeah,
exactly. All you can really say it is. Yeah.
And so I was wondering about that. And then we also breezed over, and I don't know if it's for the whole best or wrap
okay,
up.
By the way, we're gonna wrap Garibaldi last. So we're gonna finish this. You know, we already did that. We're wrapping the Sheridan thing. So, you know, they do that. I was just saying it's very interesting to see Delenn saying, you all have to join us for these reasons. How much is gonna land? I really like that theory on Clark as an FYI, but what I do could see as a storyteller is going, you know, this guy is the villain. Let's not do anything redeemable at the end. Let's not make him likable. This has to be the coward taking the coward's way out at the end and causing our heroes to be heroic. I'll give you that moment because that could have been interesting. And that could have also been a nice Twilight or whatever, right? As, ooh, the Drak have invaded Earth as well.
I think it would have been better to just either go all the way, like Dan, you were saying about doing the Keeper thing, or go less than what they did. Not put the whole scorched. They didn't need the scorched earth. You could have just had him like put a bullet in his head and they just see him slumped over his desk, which would make even almost be more effective in this way than confusing as it is now.
All right. So that's the end of that. And we have two happy endings left. We have a second happy ending for Sheridan, just like Lord of the Rings, right? One ending's not enough. We got to have a second ending, second creepier ending. So the first ending, though, we do get the Garibaldi double-sided ending, which is interesting if you think about it. So Bester, while Sheridan is in captivity, does come in to basically say, where's my wife, right?
Where's my mistress?
Yeah.
Remember, he has a wife and kid at home, and but this is the one I love.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's been revealed that the Psi-Corps forces people to breed, you know, so they're not love marriages. There were 100 shadow telepaths that Babylon 5 had controlled. They used 30 of them, like Daniel knew, to take over the things, and I'm guessing all, if not most of them, are dead, right? So Bester comes in and says, hey, congrats, good job. FYI, saw you use my telepaths.
If one of them was my mistress, ooh, I'm going to do something.
What's funny is Bester does this thing and everybody treats him like a nerd. They're like, oh, what are you going to do, nerd? And he has literally done the most damage to the core cast. So it's hilarious. What are you going to do? Rip out my brain?
Going to make me fall in love with someone and then years later reveal that they're a sleeper agent that actually hates my guts? It's like, yeah,
it's on the table. We did get the back and forth where Sheridan's, that happened to my wife. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. I'm going to steal a Jeffism. You know, we set up patreon.com/Jeff May, like the grandparent of why this show came to be. And he had a good tweet, skeet, whatever you call him now, social media post. He's like, you wouldn't wish that on your worst enemy? Have some creativity. So again, when Sheridan's like, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. It's like, really? What? Why not? They're your worst enemy. Really? But so Bester gets his closure that he helped them fight. His mistress and unborn child are still cryogenically frozen. And then this is funny because if it ended season 4, it's played as a high note. But really, if we're talking the happy endings of Garibaldi, Sheridan's like, yeah, Garibaldi told us what happened. I bet he's not too happy with you. He's wrapping up some things. But when he's done, he's got some work to do. And let's just note that Garibaldi, a mundane, it was controlled by a telepath, is mad at a telepath. What's he supposed to do?
Anyway, sneak up on him. Just go behind him. It's like they're really quiet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that, oh my God, we'll have so much talk season 5. But then we get the real happy ending, which is Lise, who disappeared during the big noir story. She was the wife of a billionaire that Garibaldi was working for. And then the billionaire got in too deep and then he got murdered and the dame disappeared. And what happened? He has like a Rambo moment where he finds out where she's hidden. He brings in another strike force. Garibaldi's all about strike forces these last 3 episodes.
I cracked up in that scene because it's like, it's the Mars Mafia, which I was like, ooh, that sounds so cool. And I was like, these are like the jankiest warehouse criminals. They're like definitely like the red coat criminals that would work for like the Joker or something that Batman would just take out early. And also I liked that, like, when they open and they like break into this warehouse, no one has a gun. Like, they're all just like fist fighting and the Rangers are using their bow staff things. This is the Mafia? Like, I think the Mafia is worse.
They've been on Mars, which has been blockaded by Earth. So they're like, listen, we want to be cooler, but we've been blockaded. We don't even get telepaths smuggled anymore. Some random redhead lady.
They did have a gun last episode when it was convenient so that Franklin could take over the militia to get Lita to do the Aigu thing on Garibaldi's head. So yeah, when it's convenient, they get munitions.
Yeah.
Then the happy ending we get is the Garibaldi saves his ex-girlfriend, who's actually shown up. She's actually been a throughput through the show. Yes. And she had been married to a billionaire who died, and she wound up with everything. Nothing wrong, right? Like, he died under suspicious circumstance, and his wife disappeared randomly. But she gets everything and is now with her ex-boyfriend, who was the head of security for the guy that died mysteriously. nothing to see here, folks. And they end up in bed together.
After everything that just happened with the regime change, this is small potatoes.
It's true. And you noted, though, it is funny that the end of the show is that Garibaldi's like the sex prize, because we see Lise and Garibaldi in bed together, which is one. And then the weirdest end ever, Sheridan and Delenn get married, like, on a ship.
Jakar, if you remember, he had a prosthetic eye put in, and he cleverly leaves it in the bedroom with Sheridan and Delenn that night.
It's a prosthetic wireless eye, right? So it's like an eye implant, but it can actually see, and it's wireless, and he can pull it out to charge it. So yeah, and yes, that is how we're all agreeing, as an FYI, that Babylon 5 ends. There is a, you know, set 20 years in the future episode that was going to be the season finale, was recorded to end this season, that will end season 5. I was going to say, we usually end, Daniel, on saying, hey, you've checked it out, are you going to check out more? We kind of know the answer. You've gone above and beyond. I guess the real question I have to you, but I think you may have already answered it, is, are you going to check out season 5?
Oh yeah, I think just because it'll bother me if I don't. It was like the issue with watching season 1. You know, I was talking to my friend John, who the, you know, Deep Space Nine advocate, we were like, oh, he was like, oh, you should, well, tell me what you're like when you're watching Babylon 5, tell me about it again. Cause like you're going through nostalgia. And I was like, yeah, you know, it did not age well, man. Like season 1, you're watching it, and I was like, I remember Babylon 5 having like top of the line CGI, all of the makeup and costumes were so over the top. It was amazing. And then you rewatch it now and you're like, no, like I like the plot. And that was super weird to start that. But then it was like, even getting past season 1 to season like 3, where I would say, yeah, season 3 is really when things are like, okay, it's good. It's, things are falling in place. Characters are fleshed out. Plots are like really more gripping. And, you know, conflict with the shadows, the Narns of Centauri, it really kind of makes you like involve more. I was like, okay, this is what I remember the most. I don't know that maybe Dre, when we were talking about watching it before, maybe I didn't remember season 1 as much, but like, that thick of it was really like, yeah, this is where it got good. So it's like, I already started off watching the bad. We've watched all the good. I'm going to have to go through the bad at the end just because, you know, I have to listen to your podcast and be like, yeah, they talked about episode 5. So now I have to watch 1 through 5. Oh, they talked about the finale. Well, I guess I have to watch the rest of it. So
yeah, my biggest impression or takeaways after watching all of Babylon 5 is that, yeah, season 3 and 4 were some of the best highlights of any television series I've ever watched. It really built up really well for those. But I really enjoyed seasons 1 or 2. I was prepared to come in and just watch a shitty season of TV show just to get ready for the rest of the seasons from what I had heard about season 1. I mean, I don't know if you went back and like in previous episodes, I've never watched all the episodes I pick and choose and just had a few that I'd watched in college. So part of this whole thing is me starting all over to really get it from the beginning. And I ended up really enjoying season 1, thinking it had a certain kind of like British drama quality to like the sets or let's get together and put on a play type thing, and ended up really enjoying season 1.
And I would even argue that like season 1 establishing everything, I enjoyed so much more than Deep Space Nine. And I think a part of that is because Star Trek already had so many races established. Mm-hmm. So Babylon 5 is literally starting with, okay, what is a Narn? What is a Centauri? Why are they this way? Why are they that way? Where like, for me, jumping into Deep Space Nine, I was unfamiliar with anything. So there was no like, oh, this is, you know, the relationship between the Vulcans and the Klingons or whatever. Ferengi, it was like, I think Ferengi were new for that season, but it was something that I was like, I am not familiar with any of the relationships of any of these races, and they're just like, you know, like classic that race doing their thing. And I'm like, that means nothing to me. So I think there was a lot of the hand holding that went in the first season I really appreciated, because to me it's the same thing of starting in Game of Thrones, where this is a new thing, these are new you know, kingdoms or whatever races, this is their politics, let's build this up. Where like other shows are like, we already have this established, go watch 3 other series to get on our level.
We were talking about this earlier, like the, you know, a lot about how each individual species on Babylon 5 works, their internal workings. Like I think about Minbari in a different way than I would like Centauri after watching the show. And it shows what a deep impression it's made on me story-wise.
Yes. And just one of the, I guess for me also just the nostalgia of it all. I'm so like giggly where I'm like, on the Vorlons. Yeah, I remember this. Oh yeah. Super like on the Vorlon side. And then I even, you know, the things you forget were like, oh, they're now doing like planet destroyers. And I was like, I forgot that the Vorlons like really turn from, you know, good parent to just, you know what, disciplinary parent. Like, we're just done. We're done.
Flip the table here.
I brought it up a million times, Dan, on the show, but very wrestling, where wrestling, you have so many face and heel turns that you're like, oh, it's so cool that your best buds. Didn't you try and light him on fire? And I mean, literally had that with Lana and Jakar making penis jokes at each other and watching sex tapes together in the last episode when literally 10 episodes back, Jakar is like, you committed genocide and I will never forgive you, ever. We are nearing the end of Babylon 5. Something we usually end the show with is asking the guest if they have something to check out. But Mike, there are no more Babylon 5s to conquer. So I'm going to start with you actually and say, Mike, what are you checking out? Then we'll let Daniel say it. And guess what? Surprise. I actually do have something to say to check out as well after
all
that.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I think this week what I've been doing, since we've been talking a lot about political shows, we brought up Game of Thrones a lot and talking about all the species of Babylon 5. I'm going to go ahead and recommend one of my favorite comic series of all time. It's called East of West by Jonathan Hickman. It's a long-running series, and it's hard to get it into a nutshell what it's about, but it's all these factions in a post-apocalyptic United States, North America world. And it really goes into just as what I like about Babylon 5, how you know all these different factions, what they mean to each other, and more importantly, internally, how their politics affects how the machinations go between them. It really does that well. And it's probably, I like Babylon 5, but it's my favorite ever, like, long-running political novel I've ever read.
And I am absolutely not reading out the description I just found at imagecomics.com on a Zoom call or anything that's going on a podcast, but it sounds fascinating, so look it up.
One of my favorites. I love East of West. So, yeah, let's throw it over to Dan. Dan, what do you have to for our listeners to check out that might not be Babylon 5?
Well, I'm going to echo a lot of the sci-fi stuff I've heard from people on this show. Like, I was a big fan of the Foundation series. I thought that was just really interesting. And I also think that The Expanse, one of the things that I really like about The Expanse and Babylon 5 is that, like, they've really fleshed out the science and the politics of the world, not just being like, we're in space, so let's have adventures in space. Like, even the fact that, like, Babylon 5 to me was a really good sci-fi show because the Earth fighters in space could turn around while they're still traveling in a single direction because that's how space works. And similarly, The Expanse does that. But right now, I am geeking out because I'm a huge Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire guy. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is out. It's a slow burn compared to the actual show, and it's a little more tongue-in-cheek. I think because they understand that this is not a grand series on that same level. These are like George R. R. Martin's novellas about specific characters in a specific time period. So they're very, like, I think the first book's like 100 pages. So it's a pretty small book. And the show is really good and it's really honest to the book, which I really like just because George R. R. Martin is one of my favorite authors that is so intentional with his writing that I'm one of those geeks that, like, when the show's like, oh, we cut this one character out because they're not important, I'm like, you don't even understand. In 2.5 books, that character's going to be super important for half a chapter. And so this one, because they don't have to worry about that because they're all kind of contained stories, they would almost be an adventure of the week kind of thing. But they're obviously drawing it out to 6 episodes. I would say check that out because it's pretty great.
That's awesome to hear. And I mean, there is a lot of overlap actually with JMS and George R. R. Martin in the past. I think they both worked on Beauty and the Beast at one point, if I recall. And mine, I'm dipping out of the sci-fi realm, but dipping into kind of the spinoff realm, which is I've finally caught up on the show The Middle, which stars the janitor from Scrubs, Neil Flynn. It was on for 9 seasons. It's wild. There were enough clips on Instagram. Hit home a lot. Daniel, tell me about the nerdy, socially awkward kid who's always reading and not paying attention. Don't know if that would relate to you at all. or anybody you know, or anybody I currently know and I'm raising. So
I resemble that remark too. So.
Yeah, but a really good show. And then it also, Neil Flynn as the janitor on Scrubs was almost a Londo-like caricature, but didn't get those Londo-like pathos moments.
Yeah, he was a Second City guy too, like early on. So like he's got a long background.
So yeah, he had a couple decent good Scrubs moments, but it is really nice to see him on a show where he can like flex all of his muscles. Great show. I'm almost through it. Okay, so next thing to watch if you're keeping up is, in the beginning, the made-for-TV Babylon 5 movie that was going to be its giant jump to TNT. So we'll get a chance to talk that. That is coming up next episode on You Gotta Check This Out. And then we're going to do season 5, Mike. But then on to much cooler things that I'm very excited about. So anyway, Daniel, thank you for being on. I think as normal, no plugs, but Dan Alvarez at this point, big back catalog of nerd episodes over at patreon.com/Jeff May. Some good ones there, right?
I was going to say, which episodes were you on? I remember the Warriors one, of course, recently. But what else were you on?
I did Warrior. I did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. And then I did a Gripes episode where I fact-checked Dre and told him and Jeff how wrong they were about certain takes they had. So that was fun to be able to come in and tell a 6-foot-plus boxer he's dumb.
Yeah, I can highly recommend those episodes. Those were a lot of fun.
All right, now as always, Mike of MikeSlater.com. So much cool stuff there. Behind the scenes for this show. Of course, you got to check this out. You get like pseudo bonus over at patreon.com/Jeff May because that's where we started. We want to make sure you all don't miss out on that. But there is a free feed that includes bonus episodes, and MikeSlater.com has all the supplementary material you need and a lot of other cool projects. Mike's an artist, a musician, a Renaissance man, and some of your magic card art that Mike has over at MikeSlater.com. I'll say this, you got to check out, and you can find me most places on the internet as Nerd Numbers. We love you all. We'll see you all for In the Beginning next time, and keep on Babylon 5-ing.
Works for me. Cheers, all.